Stop. Okay, good. Okay, so we have sort of a tall order for today. It's a lot of halachas. I didn't focus on anything specific. I think I wanted more to give a general sense of the halachas that there are and what's out there and the issues and so on. On the first page, I listed on the left-hand column some common shilas that come up. One would be using facilities of a church, let's say a gym or elections if they have it, or anything else, a hall that they rent out, whether it's the sanctuary itself or some adjacent hall. A second one is holiday gifts to people, a very common issue. Religious music, holiday greetings and wishes, selling sacramental wines or wafers. This actually was a shaila that came up in England. There was somebody, matzahs for people that are allergic to gluten and to wheat. So somebody in England, after a long process, was able to get oats that wouldn't, that he was able to make matzahs that people could use on Pesach. He received a large order from the church to use as a sacramental wafers, mutter osa. There's a halacha about holiday commerce, not even holiday items, the other items. Another issue that comes up in Eretz Yisrael more than here, Eretz Yisrael people are not aware of the decorations and the tinsel. Can you use it for sukkah decorations? Buy it now at a discount and use it for a sukkah. Can you not use it? Those are shilas that come up, and they're halachic shilas, and they need to be dealt with halachically. So that's the first thing on the right-hand column over here. I tried to organize. It's not a Avodah Zarah. There are many, many subcategories, and the subcategories are important to bear in mind. Let's go through them a little bit. There's an Isser. If you take a look just on the second page, on the second side of the first page, the Rambam lists 51 Isurim and mitzvahs associated with Avodah Zarah. So Avodah Zarah comes in a very, very big packet, and there's the Rabbanans also. So you need to really, really get a sense of all the different issues. One is Isser Avodah, not to worship an Avodah Zarah. In other words, to perform the rites or rituals of an Avodah Zarah is something which is not also, I could say, the Isser. Second is Isser HaNobet HaKrevis, something that was used in the worship itself, like sacramental wine or wafers. That's two. Three, Misham Sheha. There's a category of utensils that were used for it, robes and things like that, that are not actually part of the ceremony itself. Four is Noi, things that were used to beautify a building, an edifice of some sort, and so on. Five is Askara Shemus Avodah Zarah, the mentioning the names of Avodah Zarah. That has an issa to it. And again, it has all these have different rules and so on. Six is Altifnu, activities that might lead one emotionally or intellectually to Avodah Zarah. Seven is Lifnei Iver, there's a special Takanas Chachamim not to do things, not to interact with Goyim in a way that will enhance their relationship with Avodah Zarah, and that's where the Issur of 3 days before comes from. And finally, another one is Halicha B'chukos HaGoyim Be'efen Klali, means to pattern your cultural life along the same pattern of culturally as Ummus HaOlam is also a problem in Halacha. And all of these, those are the major categories I could come up with. What I photocopied was two sets of halachas. One is from the Rambam. The mail of the Rambam is, encapsulates the Gemara. In other words, the Rambam basically sticks to what it says in halacha and the Gemara. And it's very useful to give us some ideas of the basics of the halacha, of the foundation of halacha. The Shulchan Aruch adds a lot more material that applies. How do we apply the halacha? Of all the halachas, this is probably the most notorious of all halachas in terms of application, for the following reason. There's a story about, I guess it's the anecdote, they always tell people learning smicha about the need for hands-on practice, that somebody was taking his practical smicha b'china, and the Rav gave him something to look at, a piece of meat, and asked him, what's the halacha? And he looks at it and looks at it, and the poor candidate says, I don't know. So he says, well, what does it say in this place? He says, well, if there's a hole in the cork of it in the stomach, then that's the halacha. So he says, well, what I didn't know that this was a stomach. I knew the halacha cold, but that this is actually a stomach of a chicken I never saw before. So always emphasize the story as sort of an anecdote to tell you that unless you know the practical application of it, knowing just the halacha, the theory is not going to be good. Hilchas Avodah Zarah is, we can know the halachas, as the Rambam brings them, which is the Gemara, basically the sugya, but how do you apply it to current other religions? Are they Avodah Zarah? Are they not Avodah Zarah? Also, the religions themselves change over time, and the practice change over time. And we also don't know, Christianity is not one big tent. It's hundreds of sects ranging from something that would seem to us to be almost pagan to things that seem to us very similar to what we believe in terms of actas and so on. So how do you classify all the different things? Which shita do we go with in Christianity? Which Christian posik do we follow? And besides which, not everything is easy to translate in terms of takrovis, karbanos. Are wafers and wine carbonous? Not carbonous. The cross, is that an idol? Is it not an idol? Icons and stuff. Very, very notorious to translate those things into the halacha and so on, to translate halacha into that reality. And that's why Shacharach is we're going to see, if we have the time, some of the most practical parts of it. So let's start with the second sheet. It's the second sheet. So we're going through some in the Rambam, some highlights in terms of the various isurim as they stand in principle. This is Perik Beis, Halacha Beis, and Hilchos Avodah Zarah. It's very interesting. The Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah uncharacteristically devotes an entire Perik about the history of Avodah Zarah, how it got started, and Avraham Avinu, and so on. This is a halachic section. He's in the Sefer, in Yad HaChazaka, there's very little in terms of, there's a little bit at the end of it, of each section, there's a little bit of one paragraph of Musa. But this is, he goes through a whole introduction. It's interesting in its own right. In the second Perek, this is Perek Beis Halacha Beis, I have it marked off. Sfarim Rabim Chibru Ovd Avodah Zarah Bavodasa. There are many theological texts that describe Avodah Zarah and so on. We've been enjoined not to read it at all. Not to think about it. And to look and to gaze at the Tzura Avodah Zarah also. Shenema al tifna lilim. Don't turn towards the idols. And regarding that, it says, that you're going to come to start researching how do you worship it. You shouldn't inquire on how it is that you worship it. Even without worshiping it, just the sort of intellectual inquiry in it. Because that causes you to start following it. To imitate it. So here we have a very strict restriction about engaging. So, for instance, studying Christian art. Christian art meaning art that has Christian motive to it, music, so on. And the question is, where do you draw the line? Can you read a dry, matter-of-fact account of ancient mythology? So Reb Moshe actually has tshuvas on it, and by and large, the general thread of it is something that is no longer worshipped, followed. It's sort of a dry historical overview. It's not something that is current and has any real appeal, that he's mater. Basically, that's the so Greek mythology wouldn't be a problem, but things that are more current, a person shouldn't. There's real issues, and again, you have to specifically ask. There's some areas. Yes,
I was going to say it'd be very hard to go into art or music
theory
without studying. I mean, you couldn't. You
correct. So again, there are different. It depends. I don't want to paskal lemaisa. I'm not a posik, and certainly I don't think I have shimur shalos avodah zarah to deal. There probably would be a difference when you're focusing on the dry technique. In other words, how do you get such a beat? How do you get such when you're studying the technical pieces, as opposed to studying it in a way that you're going to be enraptured by its beauty and ideas and so on. And yes, there is a line. It's not an easy line to draw. It's not an easy line to define. It's something that we might not be comfortable with, but it's there. And the Rambam says it's something that it's a Issa D'oraisa. And he just says, Gimel, chol lav ma'elu binyan echad hein. These are all the same lav. V'hu shle yifnach avodah zara. V'chol hanifnach ra b'der shoyis v'maisa. And if you do it by doing some maisa, raise a loker. And then he says, certainly a kefir is the same thing. It's a problem. People tend to be swept along. The Torah says swept along with the ruach of things. And if a person is not careful, the Torah asks for a person to do it. It's if somebody has that issue, for instance, somebody who is let's take an example. Somebody who's studying art. I will draw. So let's say I'm studying a painting of him hanging. So if I'm studying technique, how did the guy make the white or the brown or the expression? And when I'm just studying technique, that probably would be good, would be okay. If I'm studying so that I get inspiration from the suffering and the this, the that, that has a problem with Latifna. And again, there are some professions where it's not, medicine doesn't really touch much on any issues. And, actually, even though today, with all sorts of alternative medicines and meditations, there are some areas, but by and large, medicine doesn't have its issues. But something like art or literatures and so on, it's something that you need to ask specific shailos. It's a thin line. But I just to understand that it's there.
What about when it's used for, say, entertainment? Like right now, remember, there's Harry Potter, but right now there's a huge series called Percy Jackson. It's all about these Greek gods and modern-day kids who get these powers and stuff like that. And you come by reading through it, you basically end up knowing all of the gods and all of their powers and whatnot. And you have these kids who are interacting with them, but it's used for entertainment for the kids.
It's something that you have to choose. I don't know if that should be a first choice. It's something that even whether it falls strictly under this isser, I'm not sure, because again, no one believes in it in any meaning, in any way, and so on. But are things that were once avodah zarah to be sort of the language of the children or not? I don't know if that's appropriate. I just, is that first choice or not? And many of these things, there's a difference between, let's say you have to take mythology in school. So that's one thing. If you're choosing a book for your kids, that's another thing. And so one definitely would be appropriate to stay away from it. If there are times when a person needs to do it, then there's a makom to ask these questions and to get, and then cut the line very fine. But whatever it was mos, Avodah Zarah was something mos, the Greek gods, as portrayed by the Greeks, are mos. They basically painted the gods in their image. and their image was not pretty. So it's a culture that's most to us. I think you have to make that point. On the other hand, there's needs in varying degrees to be familiar at least with that culture, to understand it, and so on. So I think it's very important to draw distinctions between needs and where you can actually choose. Okay, let's take a look at the next one. Is the Rambam Perek Shvi of Avodah Zarah. Halacha Beis. Avodah Zarah Atzma U'mishamsheho V'takrova Shelo. So the Avodah Zarah itself, the idol, Mishamsheho, the utensils used to service it, V'takrova Shelo, and anything that's been brought as a carbon to it. You're not allowed to have any hana from it. You can't sell it. You can't get any gain from it. You can't give it to your dog. Nothing. Now, we don't think that this is applicable, but actually, there was a major uproar, I don't know, maybe a decade ago. When the following issue, most of religions today, Islam, we'll see soon, is not considered by vast majority of poskim as avodah zarah. Christianity, there's some ifs, ands, and buts about it, but we don't really have anything, sacrifices, not exactly. So that's not. Other religions, Buddhism is kind of very unclear if it is a religion, whatever it is. But Hinduism to us seems to be an Avodah Zarah. Even though I think officially Rabbanut's gone on the record that they don't really accept Avodah Zarah, I don't know. It's certainly, the problem is you get into semantics. It's not the idols, but it's what the idols represent. But this, that, I don't know. You know, the lambda starts getting kind of, and I also don't know. I'm not sure who's the spokesman, who's the posik for the Hindus. But at any rate, the Hindus Hindus would seem to be Avodah Zarah by most reckonings. They're full of idols. They're always bringing stuff up. There is a Hindu temple where in India where women come, they shave off their hair and that, and they offer it as a sacrifice to that god. Now, it's a waste. The gods just can eat just so much hair. That's just the amount, you know, they, without getting sick. So some Jewish person got the idea that this would be a great place to supply shaitels with. That, you know, it's a win-win situation. They get rid of their hair. We need hair. So, and that's where they made. And, you know, in India, you can buy the hair by the ton and sell it for a few $1,000s per shaitel in America. And this is where most custom shaitels were made from. So somebody realized this, and he raised a ruckus that this is Avodah Zarah and it's also Bahana. This is Takrovas Avodah Zarah and it's also Bahana. And it meant in one fell swoop, you know, many from ladies had nothing to wear except for a snood, and that was it. You know, the shaitels, and there was a huge ruckus in Eretz Yisrael about it, especially in America. And then there was the sort of, I would say it was quasi-comic debates. What exactly is the function of cutting the hair? So, I don't know who spoke, I don't even know which Indian language they were speaking in that temple. It's a very, very large temple. But, you know, people went there and they asked Shilas. One shamus over there said, of course, this is for the idol to eat. One said, no, it's a purification ceremony, like washing yourself. So you had machlokas of Tusha Moshim in the Hindu temple about what it is, and we don't have any klolim harapaskin and machlokas in Tusha Moshim in the Hindu temple. And from people went to look at it, but I don't know, and it makes a big difference. If it's a purification rite, then there's no problem with using the hair. If they feel that this is for the Avodah Zarah, an act of submission of Avodah Zarah or a gift of Avodah Zarah, whatever it is, then it's also Bahanoah. And what a terrible Isser. And you have to burn it and so on and so forth. It's I think they no longer take from there. I think they take from Russia and other places where people sold it for money and that's it. But it's really, this was a practical application. Takrovus Avodah Zarah is extremely awesome. And here was a case of something which was Takrovus Avodah Zarah. Let's take a look at the next page. Vav. Tsuras she'oises ha'goyim l'noi. However, let's say they make little statues or crosses or whatever it is as jewelry. Mutarim ba'no, that's mutin ha'no. So the same idol, if it's the type of idol that's manufactured for the Avodah Zarah itself, that's asur hanah. If it is done for jewelry, it's muta, and therefore you can sell it. So a jeweler or somebody's manufacturing, and he has a line of little crosses, or somebody has crosses on it, and so on and so forth. That's okay. And then he says, "Ketzad kol atzuros nimtzos bikforim asurim b'hanah neshechaskos neshesul avoda." Anything that you find in villages, they probably, since the villages are not developed, they don't have sculptures there just for beauty. They're really backward villages. So that would be asa. V'nimtzos b'medina, and those that are in the more developed, in the cities and so on. So it depends. If it's standing like at the gate with the entrance, so that's done more for religious reasons, and that would be also. So depending on where it was located, this was a pagan evaluation, that depending on where it's placed, it that determines whether it's there to enhance the beauty of the city, or it's there to worship. Let's take a look. The next halacha is Tess. That's just a reaffirmation that it's also about Noah, the Avodah Zarah. Tess. Avodah Zarah, Mishamesh, V'cholat HaKrova Shalom, Oysim V'chol Shehen. They are usher, even one in a thousand. So if one hair of that, if we determine that those hairs are Takrovus Avodah Zarah, one hair of that got mixed into a shetel, it asks the whole shetel. It's very chomer. The pasuk says, you can't retain one iota of it. It is the most chomerik issur there is. So if we determine that hair is Takrovus, it's very, very chomer. And it asks, so the Avodah Zarah, the Meshamesh, and Takrovis are the ones that answer tremendously. Let's take a look at the next halacha, Yud Zayin. It's all in the same perek. It's perek Zayin. Perek Zayin has most of these halachas that we're dealing with. Now, this is an area that becomes a nogea to the issue of the using church facilities. Yud Zayin. Avodah Zarah shehoyola merchatz ogina, an Avodah Zarah that had a pool or a garden or park associated with it. Nanimba shelo betova, you can enjoy it. Shelo betova, undefined. Shelo betova means it's not for a favor. I'll tell you in a second. We'll consider two possibilities. But you can't use it for as a favor. Let's say it was commonly owned by the Avodah Zarah and others. It was a common property. You can use it even if the clergy gain from it, but not directly pay them. It's very unclear, a few elements of this halacha. We'll see later in Shulchan Aruch, possibly. By and large, the main point is they did not want you to feel beholden to the Avodah Zarah, because that would lead to a closer relationship. You can ignore someone that's not done you any favor, but if he uses gym every week, there's not, you know, you feel beholden to the person, and you're more inclined to listen to the person, and so on. So there's a question of which way is it? Is it if you use it for free and it's shalom, and then you don't feel obliged, or vice versa? Does it mean, I will see in Shahar a little more specific, but the Rambam is still kind of unclear. The Gemara is unclear what it means. The possibilities are, what happens to the money? If the money goes to pay the clergyman their salary, it's not an issue. If the money goes for the best case scenario is the money goes for the benefit of the people coming. They get air conditioning, they get heating, they get facilities. That's the most cool that they can want. That's okay. As opposed to where it directly buys Avodah Zarah, that's most chamer. We'll see in Shachar a little more specific. But the halacha, as it stands, is... Let's look... Yes?
Two quick questions.
Yeah.
So that'd be more similar to like the situation like with the why?
Well, the why is even further. The why is not...
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's just
the why would not be an issue at all. Because even though it's Young Men's Christian Association, but there's no real... it's not affiliated with a church per se, so that should not be an issue at all.
And the other question is, you know, regardless, I guess depending on how one paskens with Christianity,
right?
Like with Trappist beer. So I remember I was asking before about kashrus if Trappist beer is fine.
I'm not familiar with
it's beer made by monks. It's,
okay,
in Belgium, it's very good.
Yeah.
but I guess would that
see the mile of that is there's two categories in halacha, whether somebody's a mumal lahachis or mumal te'ovin. If you do an avera because you enjoy it, or you do an avera to spite. So the more enjoyable it is, the safer you are. So if it's really good beer, then there's what to talk about.
All right, so I guess I'm okay then.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So what? So again, so
it's beer made by monks, and they make the beer, and that's how they support the monastery.
My assumption would be that the vast amount of the money is used just for them to eat and drink, which would be okay. I don't think there's much in terms of Takrovis. Finally, Yud Ches, in this category, the next page. Merchat She'esh B'Avodah Zarah. If you have, they built, this is something that's very common in like in a place like Holy Cross Hospital. If they had a bathhouse with an Avodah Zarah, a sculpture of Avodah Zarah standing there, one of their gods is sculpted and standing in the bathhouse. You can, so same issue if somebody goes into a hospital, you know, like Holy Cross, and he has on the wall a little sculpt of him. Since it's not intended as an object of worship per se, it's just something that you like having a picture of, that would be okay. Shenema Eloheihem bizman shenoeg meminig alohus v'loy bizman shem vazna yisay kegoin zish shemedes alabiv v'kol mishten lefanam. So this is a little bit of a contradiction. He brings a Gemara that he says, on the one hand, it's there only for beauty. On the other hand, he also says it's not a very bekovedika place to be, because people would you know, it's a bathhouse and people would do what they needed to do in front of it. So which one is it? Let's say it's not in a bathhouse. Let's say it's in a very respected, it's in a courthouse or something. In an American courthouse, there would be one, but in some other setting, in a restaurant. Somebody took me out once to a restaurant, and in Seattle, and they asked me if I would go, and I asked them what's the issue. They said, "Well, the good news is that the kashrus is fantastic. It's a vegan restaurant with a hersha. The bad news is the company says there are a bunch of statues all over the place. A little Buddha's. It was a very kind of that type of setup. So it's there for noi." So he starts by saying it's for noi, and he ends up by saying because he mevazet. There's a big gap between the two. The Rambam is not clear which is the ikker. He says because it's made for noi, and then he says because mevazet. The Rambam itself is ambiguous, and it's a problem. It needs to get some pshat in it. Yes.
With HC though, the statues in front of HC.
Yeah.
It doesn't appear that they're there for noi. It's more that you're entering the auspices of the...
That's called noi. It's called noi because it's not an object of worship. You're demonstrating something. You're saying something. Avodah Zarah is... An object of Avodah Zarah is when it's there to be worshipped per se, to bow down in front of it and to pray to it.
Even though it's there to create an impression, you're entering the protection of this...
Yes, that's called noi in this case. It means it's there for the ambience, for the atmosphere, as opposed to actual worship.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Avodah Zarah is defined. Okay, let's take a quick Perek Tshi. In Perek Tshi, we have the final halacha, or almost the final halacha, which is which is probably the most difficult. It's the Rabbanah de Kedin. It's halacha. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
A lot of times in Chinatown, they have this big arch.
Yeah.
Full of images. I don't know if there's any forbiddance of passing under it.
So, to the best of my knowledge, again, those images, it's even for the most devout, I don't know what religion would be, nobody is there, they're not going to bow to that arch, and it's not like a little place made, like, to worship it. It's something which is just there for beauty. Let me give you a flip example, where one place I was, I grew up in Lower East Side, and my mother used to live there. And after I was here already, I would occasionally visit her. And I remember walking by on Canal Street from the subway to the house. And I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I walked by, I guess we can call it a shtiebel. It was a storefront. And in the back, there was this huge statue. In the front, there was a young shamish. People would come in, and it was time to sit, and then you'd see people bowing. And I kind of flipped. It was a storefront with a back, and as I walked by, there was this huge, like, a statue, like a whole room-sized statue, and people coming in and bowing. That's an Avodah Zarah. It's made for that. It's made to bow to it, and that's Avodah Zarah. If you have those little statues around for good luck or whatever it is, just to remind you, like he said, that you're under the auspices of higher beings, that I think would be noi. Okay, yeah. So there's a difference between... Okay, good. When a person walks by a statue, he walks into the hospital and he passes a statue on the way there, there's no problem with that. If a person sits down and studies it, let's understand the draw of Christianity. Let's understand the beauty of Islam. That becomes a problem because you're drawn to it. So it's one thing to pass by and just to make use of it. It's another thing to engage in studying in a way that you have an attitude of trying to absorb that culture.
With the music, would it make a difference if it's sort of the Bach style, or where it's meant for use in?
So
the
if
as opposed to like the popular teacher when you're in Giant.
So it probably would make a big difference. Most classical music was commissioned by the church. They're the only ones that could afford to commission people to write pieces, and much of it is. If in a piece that stands by on its own, whether it's a requiem mass or whether it's something with an innocent title, if the music stands as music, then it doesn't make a difference really. If the sense of the music is very associated with it, then it probably would, like something like the Gregorian chants where it's heavily Catholic and you get that sense of it, and that's what the music is. That's the quality of the music. Very heavily, where you really sense the liturgy and you get the sense of the magnificence of it and the grandeur of it and so on and so forth, that starts becoming problematic.
If you're in a music appreciation class, you're not
going to
be able to avoid that.
So you'd have to ask a specific shayla. And then if you're doing it in a very, very matter of fact, this is it, frame it that way and so on, there's room to be made. I know when it comes to a specific issue, you need to ask somebody. I'm not sure who has the familiarity with both ends of it to be able to pass like that. But it's not easy. It's not push it. Let's take a look at... Yes. Let's take a look at Perek Tshi. This is a halacha that could have been very, very difficult for us. We'll see how the Shachar takes it. These are four or five halachas. Perek Tshi, Shlosha Yomim Fnei Yideim Shel Goyim, Asu Likach Ben Belimkel and Dovah Miskayim. 3 days before a holiday of the Goyim, you can't sell them something that sits around. Velilvos Melavosim, or to lend or borrow. Or Leparim Leparim Malva Bishtar B'Shal Mashkin, any types of business. But if you lent them money a balpeh, so you have no choice, because if they're not going to pay now, you don't know when they'll pay. You can sell them stuff that's perishables. Let's skip over to Beis. You can't send a present to a guy on his holiday. Unless you know that he does not believe in Avodah Zarah and doesn't worship it actively. The reason is because he will see it as a sign of religious success, and he's going to thank his idol for giving him that success, and you're causing him to thank his idol. And if a guy sends him a present on his holiday, he shouldn't accept it. If he's afraid of enmity, he can hold on to it and then find out whether or not he's over the Zara. Let's say it was a long holiday, 3 or 4 days or 10 days. It doesn't make a difference. Dalit is a very famous Rambam that we didn't have for a long time because the census had excised it. We have it back again. Dalit. Hanotzrim ovd avodah zarah hein. Christians are ovd avodah zarah. V'yom rishon yameidim hu. And every Sunday is their day. Lefikach, also losid losim on Beretz Yisrael, yom chamishi shishi, ishebechol Shabbos v'Shabbos. So Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, and Sunday, v'yitzach yom yirishon atzmai. That would make life a little difficult. If you could only give a mortgage to a guy on a Monday or a Tuesday, you'd really, really have to limit your business. And v'chein oigemon, that's the Rambam Shita. We will see how the Shulchan Aruch paskins, but this classically, that divide has been the Rambam in other places. Take a look. What we'll see in a second, in one other place, the Rambam says that Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah, and he writes that in Tshuvas and so on, and Christianity he did peg as Avodah Zarah. We'll see how the Shulchan Aruch writes about it.
Christianity in Egypt was, like Eastern Orthodox.
Correct. It was It was, and in later Tshuvas form, you actually have by name distinctions between Calvinists and the one hand to Catholic. I guess the catch name for Protestants or the Protestants there was Calvinists. Calvinists were not considered over Avodah Zarah. Catholics, there were issues. Greek Orthodox, the Orthodox churches tend to be very heavily icon oriented. There were differences. The Poles can make that difference. Let's take a look at the next one. Hey, You give charity to both Goyim and Jews because Darkei Shalom. I want to add something which I think is correct. Eva means you don't want to arouse enmity. Darkei Shalom is because it's appropriate to live together in harmony. V'shalom b'shlomom, v'afilu b'yom Edom, you can inquire as to their well-being, Yom Edom, Darkei Shalom. But to say twice shalom, to be extra, in other words, to make it very special, that's a problem. Take a look at, let's skip down Perek Acharas at the bottom of the page. Ein holchen b'chukas ha-goyim, v'lo medamelen loy b'malbosh le'b'segetzpon. Culturally, you should not look and appear like a goy. Shenem l'asech chukas ha-goyim. V'nema b'chukaseim lo salechu. V'nema yisham alecha. Hakol in echer hu. Mazir shalo yidam alehem. It's warning us to look distinct. Eloyia Yisraeli muvdol mehem. A Jew has to be different. V'yodua b'malbusha, recognizable in his clothing. U'bishar ma'isav, and all his activities. Meaning his activities are much nicer and on a much cheshva level. K'moyish muvdol ma'ador ma'isav. Just like his perspective and his Weltanschauung is different, it needs to express itself outwardly also. V'chein hu oimer v'avdas chimram. It says, I will separate you from the nations. Lo yilbash b'mal b'shechlen. You shouldn't wear distinctly goyish clothing. V'lo yigdal tzitzis k'mo tzitzis roisham. You shouldn't wear the exact same haircut. V'lo yigalech m'nat stonich sa'be'em tzak m'shayisen. The Rambam basically includes many lavim about cutting payas and so on, and that the point is to look different. This is the reason why Hasidim are very insistent on looking extremely different. And it's a problem, you know. On the one hand, if you interact, you need to sort of be similar. On the other hand, if it's impossible to tell anywhere whether you're a Jew or a Goy, there's a problem. Halachically, we'll sort of skip, fast forward, there's a distinction between things that are functional. If Goyim wear sweaters because it's cold outside, then Jews can wear sweaters because it's cold outside. There's not a difference in that, and so on. Things that are there because they have a rational explanation, there's a focus that Poskim say on the word chok. In other words, cultural trappings are expressions of a person. They're not functional for the person, but they're expressing a certain way, and therefore, if the content of our culture is different, then the expressions of it will be different. And that's why, for instance, such as Lashina, Shmam, Levusham, and Lashinam, all of those are important. It's probably for us today in America, and maybe thank God, the biggest struggle we have. Baruch Hashem, we don't have the persecutions, we don't have the real issues with our Avodah Zarah and so on, but we do have a tremendous desire to fit in as much as possible, and even wearing a yarmulke, you know, so some places it's a real issue because a customer won't come if I wear a yarmulke, but many places just a desire not to be the odd man out. And, you know, these are difficult questions. A person needs to be honest with himself and ask himself, is it because, you know, the customer needs that comfort level that I look similar, or is it because I don't want to feel like an idiot and look different? This, you know, a person has to be honest with himself and make that determination.
The clothing is followed, the Goyish clothing
is so the question was, there were always... Even then, it's very interesting, there were nuanced, almost all Chassidim, there was... I once saw a few years ago a magazine, and I saw put out the nuanced differences in clothing of each Hasidic group, and the particular changes they made not to be like the goyim. So wearing the bow on the right side, the left side, wearing this, that. There was a difference. You're right that in the general picture, it reflected whatever it was. People wore long coats because it was cold, and they wore fur, and they wore this and wore that. But they always made sure...
And ties and things like
right. So again, I would say... Today, wearing a suit and a tie is makes almost stand out as a yid. You know it's become. It's like when people ask, you know, what's the meaning of wearing a hat? Like, why don't you use my hat? Well, the truth is because you know for sure. But even when I was growing up, a hat was a chashuv person wore a hat. And Kennedy, I think, was the first president that had hair, so he didn't need to wear a hat. And he actually, you know, and he had a big chup and a nice chup, and that was it. And that was the end of the hats. But there was some sense of dignity, some sense of difference. Again, these are things that are notoriously difficult to translate practically, because how do you translate exactly what's a Malbush Yehudi, what's not a Malbush Yehudi? But the desire, when somebody comes along and says, we should wear this because it's in, the argument is we should not wear it because it's in. You know, just something being culturally in is not a reason to wear it. We need to have Havdalah. The fact that we have tzitzis hanging out, the fact that we have payas, a beard, whatever it is, we do need to show some sign of Havdalah, at least some sense of it.
When Rambam times, I think it was much easier. I mean, with the Dhimmi status, where he was, I mean,
so I say in the ghetto was also we were clearly distinct, and that's what I'm saying. Thank God for us, it's just an Isoyan that we can deal with, but that's our challenge to be able to freely interact in the world around us and yet to have that sense of distinction of lahavdil. It's tricky,
Is it lahavdil for us or is it lahavdil for them? Like for instance, Hasidim, their shirts, they button them right over left,
right.
Which is how women's clothing is done. Men's clothing is always right. Left over right. But nobody's going to be able to see that because...
No, they do that for Kabbalah reasons, not to say that. That's because Al-Pi Kabbalah, the right should always be over the left. Should be should you know the right is midas harachmim, the left is midas adin. That's just Kabbalic symbolism. Oh, okay. That's also havdalah.
I thought it was also so like one can grab a gun or something in the old days.
No, I the right over left is a chassidish thing to always make sure the right is over the left, to walk with right first. It's Kabbalic symbolism. It's not really halacha, I think. Let's take a look. One more halach in Zion, where he clearly makes the distinction. This is in Macholos Asuris. He makes a distinction between Christians and Muslims. He says that there's a difference in Yayin Nesach, whether as is an Ano or not, Yishmelim Anar of Azura, Notzim Ovid of Azura, and so on. Okay, the next few is Shulchan Aruch. We don't have time to do it all or much of it. I'm just going to try to point out the ones that would be very significant and interesting. Okay, the second page of Shulchan Aruch. It says, Yerodei Kuf Memalov Hilchas Avodas Kochavim. To Ramah. What is the status of a cross? The Ramah says, now, bear in mind, the Rambam lived in the 1100s, and he lived in Egypt. The Ramah lived in Poland in the 1500s. The big difference in terms of being able to evaluate Haggah, Shesi ve'erev, Shemishtachvim lo, a cross that they bow to, Dino kedin tselem. It has a din of Avodah Zarah, ve'aser v'lo bitul. And that becomes aser unless the guy himself broke it. So the cross that actually is the focal point of Avoda that they worship, that they not just hang in the church, but the one that they bow to, that would be would have din of tselem. Avol shesi ve'erev shetolim betzavol zikaron, but the crosses they wear around the neck. Shebom u'kosehem lo mikrit tselem u'muta. So that's muta. It does not have a status of zara. That's similar to noi, but he's making a clear distinction. The bowing to down to a cross that's a focal point of the bowing is Avodah Zarah, but the ones that they wear, whether it's earrings, around the necks, any place like that, those are not Avodah Zarah. I don't know, I haven't really been into Christianity, but when they used to go out in crusades and had these big crosses that they wore, that they carried like staffs, I think they might have bowed to it, they might have forced people to bow to it. I, that might also be. But the general trinkets that they sell, the stuff that they sell for the holidays, that's not an Isser Hanah.
Would that also be
with
the rosary?
The same thing. I would say it's the same thing. It's let's take a look at the next one. Kuf Mem Gimel. So merchatz we saw, but the next halacha, also l'shmo klei shir shalilim, you can't listen to their music, ole stakel benoya lilim, kim shenena biriya. In other words, to listen to the music, church music, or looking at it with you know appreciating its beauty is aser. And the Ramah adds that I don't think it's cholik. I think it's just an addition. But if you happen to walk through the mall and you're busy shopping for a pair of shoes and the music is blaring, it doesn't become usur to be there. There's a klal as follows. It's a gemara in Pesachim. It deals with Avodah Zarah and other things. If a person happens to be walking through a place where they're, you know, doing something like Avodah Zarah, if it's eino miskavin lehanois, that's not called a hanah. Something which just happens to you happen to walk by and something is there, if you didn't choose it willingly, for instance, if you have a choice to shop in two malls, one mall has lots of music and the other one doesn't, and you're choosing only the music because you appreciate the music, that's a problem. But if you're shopping and just can't help it, for the last month or so, it's been, my wife is Israeli, and she said when she began to understand the songs and just feel the level of inundation, it was kind of stunning. At first she didn't understand what it was, and you know, just she blocked it out, but as she became more familiar with it, it kind of shocked her.
Most of the music you hear is just sort of like seasonal. So I mean,
correct. So if it's not, if it's something, you know, there are some songs like Silent Night, which I think is profoundly religious. And there are some songs that you know the reindeer. The snow. I know you don't. I mean, yes. Sorry.
What if it's actually, you know,
Demonstrating is common in Mazar, but what if it's actually very pleasant? You're there and you're suddenly experiencing, you're not just walking by and hearing music, but you're walking by and you're hearing a beautiful song.
So again, if you put your ear to it, you've done something now. You've stopped shopping for the shoes, and you're now focused on it. And that would probably be miskaven. If you stand for a moment or two, and you listen, that's called miskaven. So ain't a miskaven means you're engaged in your activities, and it's there. You don't have a choice. Let's give another example. Imagine, let's say there was some sort of holiday where they would have incense in the streets, and you're walking by, and it smells really nice. But you're not choosing. You're walking by through the street. This is the street you need to walk by to get someplace. You're not doing anything that would indicate that. But if you stop and you smell it, and you know that becomes a problem. So it's delicate. You have to be. If you feel that yes, you're going to pause and listen because it's nice and it's especially moving, that becomes this issue. Yes.
Recorded?
Oh, sorry.
No, it doesn't.
When you're talking, there is an iser bezmanaz of music, sphere, and stuff like that. There's room to distinguish between the recorded or canned music, recorded or live music, because that's the level of hana. It's a whole world of difference where they're sitting at a concert in a hall that's primed for a concert to listening to a cheap recording someplace. But when you're talking about the religious aspect of it, that you move by the words, whatever, that depends. If a person, I remember a vivid memory of when I was a young boy, Kennedy was killed, and we went, my father went with someone else to a friend's house of his, from person, to listen, to see the services. And there were a few from people there. And as they said the eulogies, it was in a cathedral. I mean, I was a young boy, but it was a cathedral. And they had like an old cardinal said a few words, and then a young fellow and that. And they were sitting and commenting about the drasha. It was like kind of, as a young boy, I just couldn't process it. He said, nothing worth listening to. Oh, he's saying it over well. He knows how to use a pasuk. And I was kind of, I was trying to process it. It sounded like they were sort of evaluating the Rav's drasha. And it was.
Awake.
What?
They were awake.
That was the difference, right? Yes.
Hear noise as well. Let's say I'm walking to the mall, although now they're making this usher, but they have like a little mechanized Santa's village or
yeah.
a place. You're walking by an Xmas tree lot.
Right.
Stop to smell the pine tree. Or
so that's no. Well, that's. That's already few. It's a many steps away. First of all, I don't know. The tree relates vaguely to the religion. There's a cloud. Reb Moshe writes in general. He writes about certain things, it being a dove mechur. In other words, because we have a tremendous, we have a certain recoil from Christianity in terms of what it represents in Avodah Zarah, the interaction we've had with them over the years. So a person is right not to, you know, to make that barrier. But in strict halachic terms, I don't know that the tree, and I don't know what the lights. I don't, they're vaguely religious symbols, not part of the avoda itself. There's a lot of gaps. We'll see in a second another amor that sort of gives a perspective, a lot of perspective. Yes. Right. Right.
And secondly, it's performed in a language nobody understands, including you. What does it mean?
If you're coming listening, and again, if the people are listening for the performance, and it's not at all the religious sense of it, when you have music in a religious setting, it's there to get you into the religion. When you have a niggun that lahavlof of those that's supposed to be ma'orer you, the point of the niggun is to get you there. So if the setting is a setting that, if the church is putting on a concert, and it's meant to be kind of a hisoris of sorts, then it doesn't make a difference. If it's a very secular setting, and they're simply, you know, and like you said, you don't say the words, and you couldn't even guess. In other words, the music is a sad music, but you don't get any of the Christian motives and so on. Unless there's clear Christian statements in the music, it probably would not be asa. If there are clear mentions of a God and praise to a God that's Christian, we would have a real problem with it.
Yep, so Handel's Messiah those words are really problematic.
Right.
They're English, and you can hear them.
Correct. And mentioning a name of Avodah Zarah and in respect, that's a problem. But if it speaks about death and something like that, and it just happens to be in that setting, I don't think. Yes, Yosef.
My son thinks he's talking about Hashem. I go very uneasy when it comes on. I try to skip it, and he wants to hear it. That is it okay if you think he's talking about somebody else?
It would mean as, if he hears it as music or something.
He thinks it's a nice thing about Hashem.
It's terrible.
We have to skip certain verses.
So, you know what? I would try to eliminate. I would try to keep it. Where does he hear it on
the tape? Or
so, you know, it is something to stay away from. It would be something to try and avoid and to pull away from. Yes. Okay, let's see forward, because there are more here, one or two that are very significant in Halacha L'maaseh. The next one we had seen about the washing, that we'll skip that. Okay, this is very important. Kuf Mem Ches, the last one, Yud Beis. This is a very, very important halacha because this really relates to most things of today. Yesh Omrim, the Shulchan Aruch brings already. He brings Yesh Omrim. It's a tour, and name it Rashbam and Tosfos. She'ein kol dvarim ela murim ba'osos man. Everything, all these halachas about giving something to a guy and so on, were only said in the old days, where they really were into worshiping idols. Aval bizman hazeh, einam bekiyim b'tiv alilim. They don't really have any understanding of the Avodah Zarah. It's not a serious relationship. Lefikach muta losei sosimam b'yom chagom u'avoyzom shatvarim. All these halachas are not relevant. In other words, they have a very generic, simple. They don't. When he gets a tip from you or a present, his sense is the boss is a nice guy. The boss is not a nice guy. He doesn't go back and thank his elil. They're not bikiim b'tiv alilim. Hagon, Ramos says, "Vafilu noisim amos kahanim." Even if they give the money to the priests, to the clergy, ein oisimem takruvus aner lilim. They don't use it for services. El kahanim ochem v'shalsim bo. The kahanim have meals, so there's no real. It's not going to be the zara. The od, the ispazem mishum evam nifresh atzmem v'yom chagom. It's going to create enmity. When it's shruim b'neim, we live amongst them. Utzrichem losesem kol hashana. We have to do business all year, and we can't. So there's, even doing it lefnim mishum zedin is going to be a problem because we need to keep up the relationships. V'lachen he says im nichnas leir matzon seichem v'yom chagom. He comes into a place and he sees they're having some sort of saint's day, then everybody's happy and merry. Yismachim mohem, he plays along bishum eva. It's the way in which it's the way in which you engender goodwill. Umikol makom, that's what the Torah says. The Ramos going to the Torah. The Beis Yosef says mikol makom bal nefesh yarchik milismachim mohem miyuchalaser evedov. But it's not a mitzvah to go look for a place to spend yontif. It's yes, if you're in a situation, then it's right not to create issues, but understand this is not ideal. V'cheni says, "Im shaleach doron legoy bezman hazeh." If you send a present to a goy today, b'yoyim. Now, this little piece here, what's been censored out and it's been put back in again, b'yoyim ches sha'acha nitl, the eighth day after nitl. Nitl is the word for Xmas because natal is the birth. That's where it comes from. I mean, people dash nitl, that's nitl mitam Torah. It's natal. It that's what comes from. So the eighth day after the natal, which is obviously was the bris, shekoyer nayo, that they call New Year's, you send them a present. Sheishem simen im yagil antorim b'chagahu. He says, and they know that, did he send the present or not? Did I get a card from him and so on? If he can, he should send it earlier. Vimloy, and if not, so if he has no choice, send then. So this Ramah is really the foundation for a lot of the things that we're able to do. The understanding between a Shulchan Aruch and Ramah, that today people don't have that level of Dveikus Avodah Zarah, that, and therefore, whether we would like to do it or not, it will create Eva, and therefore we need to interact in a way that doesn't engender any ill will. It would not, if Hinduism is Avodah Zarah, which seems to be, then that would not apply. None of this would apply. And if you'd live in India, you'd have a real problem with them. I don't know their calendar of Yom Tovim, but that would be a real issue. But as far as Christians go, between the fact that they're not so into it today, and the Mela, it's not real Avodah Zarah, it's just a question of amenities. So the Mela, it's going to be just a type of, it's a Meir sign maybe or something. There we can do it because of Eva's Mutter.
Could you wish them a good holiday and name their holiday?
So naming the holiday itself, because the word Christ means the anointed, the word Jesus is actually a much safer word in the sense that it's the name of a person. It says in Halacha, we didn't go into it, calling Avodah Zarah by name. The tradition was to always kind of change it. The most famous one probably is Satmar Chassidim, come from a village called Satu Marie, Saint Mary. That's where they come from. They changed the name. They made a Shinui Hashem so that they don't have the problem. The word Christ is actually, so you're not allowed to mention names of Avodah Zarah except if it's the same name as something else. So Yeshu is a name. It was a Jewish name, and it's not in itself. Christ means the Anointed One, which. It's, you know, on the one hand, Mashiach itself, the word saying if a person is anointed as Messiah is not really, but that already has heavy symbols. So if a person can avoid, by the way, the word Xmas, I don't know if you're familiar, the word X is not, people think it's more frum, but actually the X is the anointment, the Greek letter X. Actually, it might even be a stronger word of Avodah Zarah. So if a person can stick to holidays greetings, seasons greetings, whatever it is, you're certainly much better because you're not being Maskei Shem Avodah Zarah. If not, again, they also make it and say it's become a generic word and it's just a day in a calendar and so on. Actually, the word calendar is an Avodah Zarah. Mm-hmm. And it's Avodah Zarah. It says Calandria. Calandria was the god, and Calandria is one of the holidays. It's hard sometimes also, by the way, in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah. The Gemara was written at an era when paganism and Christianity were Mishamshim Bervuvia. Sometimes the pagans were stronger, and so some of the holidays listed are pagan holidays, some of them are Christian, and the truth is Christians adapted pagan holidays, so there's a little bit of irv. This Ramah happens to be the one that we most significantly use today for our problem. I guess just to wrap up, first of all, there are many, many issues. Avodah Zarah is a big topic. And, you know, even though we don't think so today, and thank God we don't have that many issues, but there are many halachas that are nogea. There are issues in terms of determining exactly, A, Christianity, what it is, determining if there's been a change over the years in terms of its, of what its beliefs are. And this is one of the things that's maddeningly difficult. How do you, if a Christian was trying to determine what Jews believe, what Judaism is, and he has a variety from ultra-Orthodox to Reconstructionist, how does he make a decision what Judaism is? How do we make a decision what Christianity is? Certainly the major denominations are separate. Catholicism is Catholicism, and you can treat it as such, and you can treat Calvinists as Calvinists, and you can treat Quakers as Quakers, and so on. Most Protestants eschewed any type of, not only true, but there's no there's no actual worship of things as such, which makes it much easier. And the more the heavy Catholic and or certainly the Eastern ones are very heavy. The question is also all these icons of saints, what are they exactly? That the saints are certainly not included in it. So that's a difficult. The question, have they changed in terms of the level of devotion and dedication after today? The Ramos seems to indicate just kind of pro forma, and that's all it is. That makes a difference. But it is also, I guess, Chukaseyem, it's important to make that distinction that is, like Ramosha writes, you know, Harchik mina kiur medadomolo. It's whatever it is, even if it has been, well, I'll give you an example. If something is dirty, you drop food in the ground and it's dirty, but you know there are no germs on it, you still wouldn't eat it because you built in a sort of a barrier to things that are other than wholesome and good and so on. Even if it's no longer avodah zarah, it's still not the most appropriate. And like you said, if it can be eliminated from curriculums, from household, this and that, it's right to do so. That certainly is correct. And in general, cultural trappings. I want to throw in something that probably would, I don't know, affect people. For instance, following professional sports. It's one thing when a person plays sports is wonderful. Playing sports is very healthy, and it's good, and it's important. Watching a game is nice. It relaxes you. Becoming, with Mesiras Nefesh, a this fan, a that fan, the other fan, where your entire Metzias is... I remember when the New York Mets were born, and my father's Grandbach was the Shamas of Bialystoker Shul on Lower East Side. It was a big shul. My father was European, and he didn't speak any English, and completely alien to the culture, the American culture. And the Mets lost an incredible amount of games, and they finally won a game. And it was on a Shabbos. They asked my father to announce it, that the Mets won the game. And my father didn't make any sense to him. Like, a few guys batting a ball around, well, first of all, why is it important? And certainly, why would you think in a shul we should mention it? You know, it's a difference. Understand that we have a cultural gap. And it's a line that a lot of times people need to do themselves. One person needs to sort of blow off steam, and this is a way to do it. But when it becomes like when like the pasuk says, whatever they do, I want to do. That sort of becomes mechukasem lo seleku. It's a subjective thing. It's something that you need to make those boundaries, Darim. But we can't do. Yes.
A lot of times I hear people say the words "oh my," and it seems to come from the expression "oh my God." So does that fall into the issue of?
I think today that expression has become meaningless. Oh my gosh, is become a meaningless expression. It doesn't relate in any way to any gods and so on. It's lost that. And therefore, since all these things are there, the problem is only because it leads to avodah zarah. If it's lost any meaning to that, then it's fine. I don't think it's a problem.
Rebbe mentioned sukkah decorations.
Yeah.
A lot of very front Haredi people have been,
It's a show.
Yeah.
So it's funny. It's all, you'll even see sometimes little, the most frum kids with pajamas and little Santa Claus on it.
Yeah.
And they, somebody actually once, I once read something very funny. Somebody once wrote an article, "How Khomeini Helped Me Get My Job." This person was, I lived in Muncie. He lost his job, whatever it was. And he couldn't find a job, he ended up teaching secular studies in a Satmara school, which is kind of the bottom of the ladder in terms of job prestige and so on. And the kids made his life absolutely miserable. He was ready to quit. He said he doesn't know what, but he walked in one day to the New York Times under his arm, and there was a picture of Khomeini getting off the plane to visit something, a big picture. I think when the famous picture when he came back to Iran or something. And one of the kids saw it, and he said, "Wow, who's that big tzaddik?" So he got an idea, and all the kids started crowding around, and so he said, "Yeah, don't you see it? Even the New York Times recognizes this tzaddik." And one kid said, "Wow, you can see the shchin on his face. And look at this, look at that." And who is it? So when they finished ooing and ooing, he said, Kinderlach, this is the reason why you're going to have to learn English. Because if you don't know English, you can mistake Haman for Mordechai. He says, this is the worst Russia that there is today. He's out to destroy Klausel and kill every one of you. And because you can't read English, you're ooing and ooing. He said, they were quiet after that in his class. And he was able to teach some English, actually. Yeah. So he said, I owe Khomeini my job. That was his... but okay. Yes. What? You may take them. Feel free. They're going to the Seamus. They don't belong to the Yeshiva. They'll go to Seamus. Yeah.
So
Rambam
Islam was not a Torah.
Yes.
Didn't it perplex him that they bound
to the stone? So he writes clearly, he writes in a letter that they're bound to the stone is not a Avodah Zarah, and so on. He actually has a letter that he wrote to a Ger Tzedek about it, to an Islam Ger. He does actually, he says it's not a Avodah Zarah. Clearly, it's not for he has an Igeris to Avadah HaGer. We actually discusses it at length. Yes. This Ger had an argument with a teacher of his, a very interesting piece. Yeah.
So Shomri has this ongoing issue. Remember being, people discussing it years ago about the arrangement with the church next to the University of Illinois.